Hi, it's me.
My name is Sale Mogami De Haas, and I'm an artist, and I was at Rupert in during the month of October 2021, the fall. Yeah, beautiful colors outside.
I was interested in your inlay works.
Yeah.
You've done quite a few of them.
Yes, yes.
I understand it's acrylic resin, and then you laser cut it somehow? How do you do that?
Well, it's a technique I developed like a few years ago, and indeed I've made like, I don't know, actually maybe 20 or something like this in 3 years. I mean, it's a lot, and at the same time it's very little, because I've been working, I mean, not full time. I have other practices as well. It's quite time consuming indeed. Yeah, it's so the base, what you see is like an acrylic resin plate, and I make a drawing first on paper or on the computer, and this drawing is then vectorized and then sent indeed to a laser machine that cuts out the drawing in the acrylic resin plate. There's also details that are not cut out, and that I then also just carve out with a hammer and a drill or something like this, or like other tools for sculptors. Yeah, so it's kind of a mix of different techniques. So yeah, digital techniques, but also more traditional crafts techniques. And then so those empty spaces, those carved out spaces, are filled with plaster, marble dust, ochres, all kinds of pigments that I mostly make. So when I find like a nice stone or something like this, I transform it into smaller bits, chips, or pigments, and that I use I mix it with the plaster, and then I fill those carved out spaces with this mixture, and then the drawing is then revealed later by sanding and polishing, and at the end, yeah, that's what you get. You get those kind of large inlay works that imitate stone. So it's a kind of like a traditional technique, but then adapted, let's say, to the making of now. Because what you see is like imitation of marble, terrazzo, so imitation more of granite. Those are really like old crafts. I mean, if you in Vilnius, I've seen them as well. If you go into in any kind of Baroque church, you will see what you think sometimes is marble is actually fantasy marble, so plaster mixed with bone glue and pigments. And this is also what I use in my sculptural work. So yeah, this is definitely like something like a Baroque influence.
Would you elaborate on the conceptual side of it? What is in your mind?
Yeah, prehistory has been a subject art. A period also that has fascinated me for quite some time. In the first like inlay works, there was always like direct references to cave painting. I don't really know how I came to cave painting. I mean, it's something you encounter in your studies or in your everyday reading, and I can place it. I studied literature, American and English literature, prior to go to art academy, and so I've always been interested in poetry very much. Like a few years ago, I read for the first time the works of a poet called Clayton Eshelman, and he's also a translator, an American poet that died last year, unfortunately, very recently. But basically, he spent 45 years, I believe, exploring caves and thinking about cave paintings. And I mean, cave painting is also not the right word because not all the paintings are situated in caves. So we call it cave paintings, but it's more like parietal art would be a better word
for it. Old school graffiti.
Old school graffiti. And he spent basically like 45 years building like a poetical oeuvre, would take his inspiration, its inspiration from cave painting, which is like, I mean, cave painting is basically the scientific field of like prehistorians, paleontologists, art historians maybe, and not poets. And this is what fascinated me also, because he could like just start playing with concepts and ideas and feelings and emotions, whereas like scientists wouldn't allow themselves to do so. Yeah, so this poetical notion, and then maybe, yeah, just wondering what brought these people there in this in obscurity, in darkness, mm-hmm. like in rather dangerous places, because those caves were difficult to access, and you know, you don't know what you can encounter in there. You could encounter anything, like a sleeping bear.
Maybe that's the point.
Maybe that's the point they were looking for. Danger. And I was, just this whole set of questions kind of like triggered like a lot of imagination. I mean, yeah, this is...
And lots of associative thinking and symbolic thinking. I especially notice that in the compositions that you do. Sometimes they seem, as if partially cut out mm-hmm. of a bigger picture. So, mm-hmm. so what are these stories? Because apparently they are stories. Am I overinterpreting or?
No, they are a narrative aspect within each work, but also each work in relation to another as well.
So it's a series of...
It's a series.
So prehistoric comic book.
Prehistoric comic book, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. No, I mean, you can see like elements that echoed, you know, along different works. So you see like, you know, certain figures, certain symbols are coming back on the work itself or on the elements, you know, that are basically holding the work against the wall. So you have this series of knobs because the work is rather heavy at the end. I mean, it's like,
And they're very specific, right? They're very figurative as well.
They're very figurative as well. Yeah. They bring the work back into the sculptural field as well, because if you would see the work, you would not immediately refer to it as a sculpture and you would think this is 2D. This is more like a print or a painting even. And for me, it was very important to stress the fact that it is a sculpture. There is depth in it. I mean, as I said, it's like carved out and filled in. And so those buttons that are basically holding the works midair against the wall, they take the work into three dimensionality. And they also tell, they are part of the stories, and they also tell a story. And this unconscious aspect of it is interesting to me because, I see them a little bit like doodles. So something you would normally do, start drawing something unconsciously, and, you know, doodles is not something you spend, you know, days, weeks, months, sometimes years to do, you know, like a doodle is something. It's like a brief glimpse into your unconsciousness somehow. The image of your thoughts at a very, you know, specific moment. And so I sometimes think of those works as a doodle that are just like extending in time. So doodles that takes a long time to make. we could start talking about all those elements. There's a lot of like a lot of references to the digestive tract as well, and
food and digestion.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I always associated that with the origin of language, like how the mouth, for example, is the first place of the digestive tract. So it's the first step. That's where it basically starts. And how I was interested in how the mouth, as you know, as the first step of the digestive tract, becomes also the place of language, and this, you know, this function transformation and what it does and what it creates. And those were always like references I try to also doodle in the work in some ways, you know, like, yeah, a lot of nutrition also, a lot of food all that have like all of a sudden a digestive tract or at least a mouth as well. Things that start to speak. I was interested a lot in this rhetoric device called prosopopeia. It's a figure of speech that gives voice to inanimate things like a set of objects, for example, like a teapot in Lewis Carroll, or even the death, basically, when the death start to talk in Edgar Allan Poe, for example. That's prosopopeia. And this is something I was using extensively in my inlay work, but also in more directly in the video work, where objects are talking, in the case of like those four pens having a conversation.
The hollow pens.
The hollow pens, yeah. Or the wolf telling us stories and indeed smoking a cigarette.
If we talk about that particular work, which I understand is untitled, or because...
It's not untitled. It's the title at the moment is Shall I like also to
change titles.
To change titles. I mean, the title is a very important aspect of the work. It's like an entry. It's like a door into the work.
Mm.
But I have not found like the right title yet for this specific work. At the moment, it's called Charlotte.
Charlotte.
Charlotte. Yeah.
It's interesting because you also put it in parallel. With a picture of a woman, of an elderly woman who assumably is Charlotte. So you feminize the wolf, the smoking, because at the same time you would think that the smoking hairy wolf is you know, as masculine of a figure as popular culture would imagine, right?
Yeah.
But then you juxtapose it with Charlotte.
Yeah, with Charlotte. Yeah, Charlotte is and the wolf could be one and the same. I was, when I started working on this wolf figures, I immediately got also interested in the werewolf or the, you know, the lycanthrope kind of figure. And so, yeah, you see, so in this video, to give it a bit of context, maybe you see a, it's a two-channel video installation, two monitors in space and facing each other. And you as a viewer, you stand there basically in the middle. On one side, you have a video animation of a wolf with a cigarette in its mouth. And on the other side of the room, you have another monitor with indeed a naked person with blood around her mouth, humming a song. It's like a call for basically, interspeciesism, like a more kind of like respectful way to live in the world with others and animals or non-human animals. And then we have this kind of like, these two channels where this with this story and then this kind of very soft humming music, beautiful tune. And obviously that person with the blood around the mouth and also like standing there naked is because there is this belief that whenever you go into the woods and you would find like some clothes on the floor, you should never take those clothes with you or throw them away, because they belong to a werewolf. And if the werewolf comes back where it left its clothes, which is her human attributes, and she doesn't find, or he doesn't find, the werewolf doesn't find their clothes, then they can't get back to their human form. And then, yeah, again, like this relation to prosopopeia, this, you know, this figure of speech, this rhetorical device, let's say, that I use a lot also in the inlay work, where animals or fruits all of a sudden have, you know, faces and mouth and eyes. Yeah.
I'm thinking of another speaking object piece that you also referred to, the hollow pens.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps you could speak more about how you came to, you know, exchanging the literary language mm-hmm. to pictorial language,
mm-hmm.
and how do they interplay
in
your work?
The pens, the hollow pens. Yeah, four pens, and how this comes to play with what you were referring to, this kind of
literary and pictorial language.
Yeah, they translate into one another.
Mm.
This, there is a very direct, I mean, it's a bit like, it's a, maybe again a bit humorous, and there is a very direct translation happening there, because I was, basically what you see in this video installation, it's not two monitors this time, it's four. And so where you stand as a visitor or as a spectator, you stand in the middle of these four monitors. And so it's like synchronized kind of media players that are like playing four different characters. And those four characters are pens and different pens. So you have on one side, you have the four color big pen, and then you have a highlighter, a stabilo, what you would use to highlight things on the text, and you want certain elements to pop out, or you want to remember certain elements. So there's a highlighter, and then there is like a digital pen, so the pen you would use to write on a tablet, for example, or on an ebook, like I have here with me. And then you have an eraser. So all those pens have different different personalities. They have different functions, first of all, and they have different personalities. And all those personalities, they stick to a kind of like a literary genre almost. For example, what happens to the four-color big pen is that he's very, he never knows in what color he should write. And then they don't write, they speak, obviously, because their attributes are little, like little mouth. They again, like they gain the power of speech. So this is like the four-color big pen. Then you have, so stabilo, the highlighter. And the highlighter is more, she knows everything, basically. She's not writing herself, she's highlighting. And I link that to quoting. And I link that a little bit to this movement in writing that is called uncreative writing. So she, basically, the stabilo has an answer to everything. She has a quote, basically, for all the situations. And then the digital pen is, it's more like a kind of posthuman, has more like a posthuman discourse. He really believes that he's the future of writing. And then it starts very sweet. And like as the discussion is unrolling, it becomes more and more misanthropic and very negative. And then the eraser obviously is not writing at all, he's erasing. And what happens to her or him or them is that they, whenever someone is saying something, she hums over. So she basically tries to erase the, you know, the opinion or the meaning or the of what the other pens are saying. So it becomes this very like operatic moment where you have like, so you have four screens, but you also have four like sound inputs, and they're all like talking, they have arguments, and then they get along again, and then they start to fight again. And it's a 10-minute kind of like short experience where you also like explore a little bit the history of writing, but in a very like playful way. And this was actually the first. This comes before the wolf story.
What are you working on now, though? You've been in Rupert for three or 4 weeks now.
Yeah.
How's it been, and what have you been up to?
It's been great, and No, I started a few drawings, which is something a bit like new for me, because I haven't made drawings for drawings. So, you know, like when I draw, I then, yeah, transform them into those sculptures that we were talking about before. That starts with the drawing, but that I never like the drawing at the end. I never show like them as works on paper, for example. But here in Rupert, I, for the first time, did a few drawings on paper, which I'm quite happy they're not here, because they're not so good, I believe, still. But it was a very like nice exercise also to kind of interrupt my reading and writing.
So tell us about your author's mark.
It's a piece entitled The Age of the Reindeer, which is a reference to cave painting or parietal art. And it's a sound piece I made in 2017. So it's basically like, I imagine like a caveman getting in and out of consciousness. So basically waking up and falling asleep again. I think that's what we are ending with.
I'm here for no one else. I'll find my own way out. I'm here for no one else. Lost the meaning of true love. Lost all sense of who I am. I will fight, I will stand. I will not give up on who I am, who I am. I will not give up.